Hi, I'm Nick Stone, author of Dear Martin and Dear Justice, and you are listening to the Power and Community Podcast, brought to you by Art of Me.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. We are in season 5 of the Power and Community Podcast, episode 2. And this season, we are focused on amazing authors and writers from around the country who are going to give us the ins and outs of writings and talk to us about their amazing books. And today, we have author, writer, Atlanta, Georgia native, Nick Stone on the podcast. And I'm so excited to have you here today, Nick.
It's a pleasure to be here. I'm excited as well.
Me too. This is a little switch up for us. We normally interview filmmakers, behind the scenes people, actors, people who are in the visual storytelling business. So to get into the industry of people who tell stories with words is amazing, because we wouldn't have those visual stories without our writers. And so I'm so thankful to just be sharing this space with you today. And we're just going to jump right in. And so I don't normally start with the, you know, the hoity-toity book stuff. I like to really get to know my guests. And so I did stalk you on the internet a little bit. And so I do have a couple questions just about who you are. And then we can get into the amazing work that you created. So I heard from a little birdie, aka your website that we're going to plug at the end of the podcast, that you spent some time in Israel living there. What was it like living in Israel, and why did you choose that place to live? And then finally, what are some differences you noticed once moving back to the US?
Israel is wild. Like, I don't think there's a better word to describe it. Like, I think of, a lot of chaos, not in a negative way, but just there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of activity, I'll put it like that. I wound up over there. I was actually there for a summer initially. I was like intensely evangelically Christian, and I wanted to go explore the land of the Bible. And so I decided to spend a summer there doing this program. And while I was there, I met this really attractive person, and then decided to marry him. So I moved there after we got married. And one of the things that's a lot different there than here, universal healthcare is a thing. I just learned a lot about how a country can operate differently from the country that I came from. Clearly I wound up back here because it's a very stressful place to live, but I did appreciate my time there. And it was there that I figured out that I wanted to be a storyteller.
Cool. I think traveling the world really does that. I had one abroad experience. I spent 3 months in London. I loved it. And it really secured me as a person. It made me feel like I could do anything in the world. If I could travel to a different place that I'd never been before and survive, then I could truly survive life as a whole. So it made me feel good. But that's when you realized you were a storyteller then. Okay. And so did you have a specific moment that kind of clicked for you? Was it when you came back or while you were there? What do you think?
Yeah, it was while I was there. I had the opportunity to meet and stay with a family that lives in Bethlehem. And Bethlehem is in the West Bank in Israel. And the West Bank has been hotly contested territory since like 1967, which is when my mom was like 6 years old. So I visited a family there, and they had a daughter who was around my age. I think she might've been a couple of years younger than me. And she had one ambition. That ambition was to go to university in the UK, but she couldn't because she didn't have a passport. And she didn't have a passport because she had no nation of citizenship. And learning about her status and learning about the fact that, you know, there are people who have been there for 6 or 7 generations who are not considered citizens of anywhere and therefore can't cross international borders because they can't get passports. And it was that story and the fact that I didn't know that situations like that existed that made me want to tell the stories that I don't see being told, including the stories about kids like me.
Yeah, I think something that I always say on the podcast and have said for at least 2 seasons now is, if you are not using your art to impact the world, it's like, what are you doing? Like, we should never just be creating for us. So I love that you saw stories that you wanted to tell. I guess I can go a little bit deeper into that question. I know that you would kind of brought up around diverse people in different cultures and religions and just different environment. How does that play a role in your writing?
Well, the beauty of growing up, so I grew up in a city called Norcross, Georgia. It is like 12 minutes north of the city of Atlanta, the city of Atlanta limit. And there were so many people from so many places. I moved there when I was in fifth grade. And the thing about being surrounded by that many different people all in the same space is that you come to realize how alike you are. Like, we all have things, we all have our differences. Like, I remember going to bar and bat mitzvahs. I remember going to quinceañeras. I remember experiencing all of these different cultural touch points from other people's backgrounds. But also, we all cried when one of our classmates committed suicide. We all got really excited when our football team went to the state championship, like things like that, where there were these emotional touch points that we were all able to connect on. And that is really what helped me to understand that humanity, like humans are a species. And as a species, we do operate similarly. And because of that, we can actually communicate and connect with each other and get along if we just take the time to lean in to those emotional beats.
I agree with that. And I honestly feel like some of the times, because I'm a writer too, I'm actually working on my first book, but a lot of the times I know that some of the perspectives I struggle to write is because I'm not engaged with different things all the time. Like, I consider myself to have a diverse group of friends, but maybe not as diverse as it could be. And as writers, we have to put ourselves in those spaces, because that is what makes good storytelling, being able to write things that different people can connect with. And so I'm taking notes, and I hope you guys are taking notes about what it means to be a good storyteller. It's about even allowing diversity to impact your personal life, so that when you do tell this special story, different people will be able to relate to it. And you know what? I thought when you just said you were around so many people, it must have been so fun to be able to go to all those bar mitzvahs and quinceañeras and different parties and things.
It was. And it really did give me this deep appreciation for other people's experiences. You know, this is the beauty of books to me. Books give you an opportunity to visit different places, to interact with different people without risk. You know, like, you're not going to fall into a volcano just because you're reading about one in a book. But our brains, they give us the experience without actually having the experience. And I love that. I love that about stories. I love that I can pick up a book and read about somebody else's anger experience without getting yelled at. You know, like things like that, I think we take for granted when it comes to stories. But that's what stories are for, in my opinion.
I totally agree. You know, my mom used to read some of my work, and she would say, "How can you write about that? You never even experienced that." Like, she would be so confused about how I could emulate an emotion or something that I never experienced. And I think that just goes back to your point of when you connect with people, all you have to do is hear the story and feel the emotion to even be able to mimic that in your writing, or even being like, I'm a human being. I can only imagine if that happened to me, how I would express myself. And then, so it's easy to put it on the page, all of those feelings that come with a moment in time. And so I totally agree with you about that as well. And so, speaking of books, I want to talk about your books. Okay. And so you have a couple of books, one of them, Dear Martin, and then the other one, Dear Justice. So I want to talk a little bit about Dear Martin right now. I'm so excited. I'm sorry. So you have your main character, Justice McAllister, a Black boy growing up in America. And that is just such a loaded sentence within itself. I mean, there's so much we could talk about what that means. We could go down several avenues. I actually did not have this question on there, but now I want to ask you, because this will help me as well as a writer. And I hope you guys listening in, this will help you as well. How did you write from a male perspective, a Black male perspective, being a Black woman? Do you feel that, yes, we share some similarities, but we are different in ways? How were you able to write from a perspective that really wasn't yours? Kind of.
Yeah, I mean, so growing up, I was always the only girl in my friend groups. It's actually easier for me to write from a male perspective than it is from a female perspective. And it took me a minute to get comfortable writing from a female perspective. And I think there's a lot, there's like a whole slew of things that go into why that is. I think misogyny is a part of it. Like as girls, we're taught to numb parts of ourselves in order to get ahead. Like there's a lot of stuff. And then of course we're constantly surrounded by the male POV and making sure that we're moving in a way that is satisfactory to men. Like it's a thing that you have to notice you're doing in order to stop doing it, right? So in addition to only really having guy friends as an adolescent when I was that age, I also do a lot of interviewing and talking to the people who are like the ones who are going to be in the book. I think that's a really important part of the process. Even when you are writing a character that is just like you, like I'm not writing myself specifically into anything. So no matter what I write, I need to talk to people who have identity markers that I might lack that match the characters. With Dear Martin and Dear Justice, I did a lot of interviewing. Dear Justice actually was one of my hardest writing experiences. I spent 8 months traveling the country and visiting juvenile detention centers because Dear Justice is about a young man who was locked up awaiting trial on murder charges. And talking to these kids, hearing their stories, that stuff gets down inside of you. And also, so do their voices. So I think that making sure to just be a good listener, like being a good listener is 70% of storytelling. Like being able to listen and take in what's being said, process it, and then spit it back out that's a huge part of the process. But I love writing whatever voices are coming to me. And they just sometimes are boys.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool to even just have that perspective and be able to write from that. I think there's always this like battle of the sexes thing going on as we tear down misogyny, which is so good. So I'm not against that at all. But even I think it goes back to that humanness of being able to identify with each other. But as women, we have to protect ourselves too. We have to call out injustice for us as well. And then at the same time, have this balance of being able to listen to the other things going on in the world. So it's a complex thing, but when you said going to visit the boys in the center, in these juvenile detention centers and how it gets down deep inside of you, like literally that just clicked inside of me because I watch a lot of reality TV sometimes too. So I watch some of those prison shows and Beyond Scared Straight and all, girl, Beyond Scared Straight, that's another, we need to talk about how that should stay canceled because, that's probably not great for the kids, but so many of their stories, it goes back to the whole point of Art of Me and our organization and even this podcast. So many of their stories are not told. People just don't care. They're locked up because they're bad and you don't get to see quote unquote bad. For y'all who can't see me, I did quotes bad people are just, they write them off, but there's so much more to these boys, their origin story, where they come from, and that all plays a hand in who they are today. And also they are not just those things that they've done to end up in those centers. And so when you said that, I really clicked with that too. I'm so glad that you were able to talk to people and kind of put that into your story because it makes me connect with the story even more to know that you got to talk to people who are similar to the story that you wanted to tell.
Yeah. And honestly, it's a really important thing for me because I don't ever want somebody to be able to pick up something I've written, read something in it, and tell me that I'm making it up. Like I need to be able to point to, no, this is the news story that I pulled this idea from. But with Dear Martin, so Dear Martin follows, as you mentioned, a 17-year-old black boy who has this, he has a racial profiling incident that really flips his world upside down. And so he starts writing these letters in a journal form to Dr. King. And like, obviously Dr. King is deceased, but he's using this journal exercise to try and understand his place in the world and how to move through a world that frequently he finds is against him, even when he's doing everything right. And in order to write that story, I had to kind of zoom in and connect with kids who were like Justice. And with that story, anytime there's mention of a shooting or a kid losing their life, I pulled it straight from the news. Even the climax of that book, I pulled from the Jordan Davis story, you know, and with Dear Justice, I pulled all of the stories from the kids that I was meeting. So you'll read about kids that Quan, the main character of Dear Justice, is meeting in his detention center. And every single one of them is from a kid that I talked to. Because I need people to understand that this is reality for a lot of kids, especially right now when we're living in the time of book banning. And there are all of these white parents who just cannot fathom the idea of their child reading a book about a Black kid facing police brutality, you know? So making sure that there is real stuff in the stories is really important to me.
So glad you mentioned that, because I did, as I was stalking you, I'm gonna keep saying that, see an interview about the book banning. And is it to my understanding that your book was on one of the ban lists?
Girl, my book is on, I can't tell you how many banned lists. It is in the first few months of the year alone, I think there were 6 different reports of it being plucked out of high school classrooms. And I did a number of events to address whatever. I mean, the first time it was banned was 2019. So it's nothing new, but the fervor with which many parents in school districts right now are plucking books by and about African-American characters and LGBTQIAP+ characters out of schools it's disgusting and also kind of astonishing. So we out here working, trying to make sure these kids have the right to read whatever it is that they decide they want to read. Access is like a huge thing right now.
Yeah, the world is changing, right? So all the stories and media that we're seeing is changing. And I mean, I can say this in so many ways. It's not right that because you have a specific belief that you tear down other people's stories and voices just because you, and I say this as a full Bible believing Christian, I still will never, ever take away somebody's right to express who they are, to tell their stories. Like, I just can't fathom not being able to fully be me. And so why would I want to restrict anybody from being able to just express? Like, it's so bizarre to me that people can apply laws and things just because of, and it's not even like a general thing that we all believe, like shooting in schools and stuff like that. Okay, we all, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you literally, I mean, that's even a whole conversation in itself about what people believe about guns and stuff like that. But I hope I'm phrasing this right when I'm saying, I just can't imagine taking people's self-expression away. And I'm so aware of the media and books are changing because people who are marginalized are finally being able to speak up, to be themselves and to express themselves. And so I just don't get, it doesn't click to me why, because people don't agree, that they get to silence people or do things like that. And I totally, from, I guess, like the white perspective, understand those people. Not that I agree with it, I just understand why they're doing it, because when they begin to face what's true about living in America, it doesn't make them feel good. But the beauty part is, I believe when they allow themselves to truly face that, they will become the best versions of themselves that they've ever seen, when they really sit with the truth and start picking apart the things in their lives. And their children deserve a chance to grow up without blinders on, so that they can truly be a part of the world and people. And I'm sorry, I'm talking a lot.
No, but I mean, I completely agree with you. You know, I think that the main issue is that we've been conditioned to prioritize ideology over humanity. And that is, it takes a lot to unlearn that, because so much of ideology is fear-based, you know, like even with a lot of these parents who oppose the idea of their children learning about racism or learning about queer rights or learning about what it means to be transgender. Like, they oppose these things based on these ideologies that they hold really, really tightly to the point where there's not a whole lot of critical thought about why they're standing in opposition to this stuff, right? Like, is there a legitimate reason for you to oppose a person deciding they want to be called a different name? How is it hurting you? I've had this conversation with some family members who, typically because of their religious leanings, if just to be honest, there's this fear of like hell and damnation that covers everything to the point where now you're so afraid of hell and damnation, et cetera, you're treating people the opposite way of this, that the same book is telling you to treat them, right? And so coming to a place where we recognize that most religious faiths do actually prioritize other people, like, you have to get to that space though. There's a lot of fear that we need to work through. There's a lot of anxiety, especially right now. Like, we are in it right now. But for me, this is why I do what I do. This is why I tell the stories that I tell, because it's vital to me that people have an opportunity to explore perspectives and experiences that are different from the ones that they live.
And when they explore those perspectives, we will become a better people. Like, it's not about agreeing with what other people do with their lives. It's literally, like you said, about treating people with humanity and just being okay. It has nothing to do with you, you know? And I mean, I'm not going to go on a tangent, girl, because you know we could, but I'm not. So let's tap back into Dear Martin and Dear Justice. So do you have a specific Black boy in your life outside of the ones that you interviewed that you feel like you know this story has impacted, or you've heard that this story has impacted? Kind of rephrasing my question there, because you kind of answered the other one earlier. So yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I get emails, text messages all the time. But actually, Dear Justice was the result of a couple of my teenage boy mentees, because I have mentees literally all over the country. And a couple of them had read Dear Martin and loved Dear Martin. They loved Justice. They loved Justice's story, and they were able to connect with parts of it, but they are not like Justice. So Justice in Dear Martin is super high achieving. He's doing everything right, never gets in trouble. He's the top of his class, et cetera, et cetera. And he goes to this very bougie prep school. He's going to Yale. Like, he's like your quintessential, when people are like, you should be like that boy. I hate hearing that, by the way, but it is a thing that people say. So my point with Dear Martin was to point out that, like, yes, even when the kid is doing everything right, because racism is deeply embedded in the roots of our society, he's still gonna face some stuff. But the boys, they read it and they asked me to write a story that was more reflective of their experience, right? So they got family members locked up. There's actually a note at the beginning of Dear Justice. I asked them to include it in the printed version of the book, where I put part of the conversation I had with these kids into the book so that people would understand where it comes from. Because making sure that I'm reflecting the stories that kids are wanting to read is important to me. And then taking their feedback and making sure that I'm turning it into more things that will keep them reading is important to me.
And can I just say, that is so awesome and brave, because I can't even keep up with what the kiddos are doing these days. So I'm so glad you were able to just put their story in a way that they can relate to, because they are so complex these days. There is so many things that I don't even remember dealing with as a child, and I'm only 27 years old, so I ain't that old. And I'm just like, whoa, I don't even think I was thinking about this stuff back then. I was like outside, I guess, fresh air child kind of.
Outside, absolutely. We did not have Instagram. We were not playing Roblox. We didn't have iPads. I mean, I'm 10 years older than you. I'm 37. So like, this a whole different life. It really is.
Totally is. We are so connected in so many ways. And so let's talk about, and you could tell me, Dear Martin or Dear Justice, did you have any fears or challenges when writing these books? And clearly they're published. So how did you overcome those challenges or fears?
So I have the word relentless tattooed on my right wrist, which is also like my writing hand. Fear is, and I think this is probably just a personality thing, but like, if I'm afraid of something, I have to conquer it. So that was one thing. But also just being a person who doesn't like not completing stuff. It was a difficult thing to get published. So Dear Martin was my third written novel, but my first published novel. So I had two other books that I wrote before that, that publishers weren't interested in. So going back and making sure I was like trying a third time, I think if you want something bad enough, you're going to do whatever it takes to get it. But what really drove me is that I have two boys of my own. I have two kids. My sons are 6 and almost 10. And they are my entire universe, right? So knowing that I have these creatures who are going to eventually be older and be able to read the stuff that I write, it helped me to get a better understanding of some of the things that they might face. And it also drove me to make sure I pushed until I accomplished the mission. Because what I don't want is for my kids to have the same experience I did, which is just not having books that featured kids like me at all.
I definitely grew up that way too, just reading a lot of people I couldn't really relate to. And I'm so grateful just for the, like the Dana Davisons and just people. I'm spacing on so many Black women who I used to read when I was younger, who would just take the young Black girl growing up perspective. And that really helped me, like Sharon G. Flake. I mean, I just had like really good perspectives, obviously not enough, but there were books that I held so dear. I kept reading them until the binding fell apart because I was just like, oh man, this speaks so much to me, especially The Skin I'm In by Sharon G. Flake. When I tell you that book was like, oh, anytime I can buy a Black girl that book, I buy her that book, because that book, it changed my life about my appearance and just my Blackness and how I feel. So I just totally relate to what you're saying. And I feel like everybody should find that special book that they can read over and over again where they can see themselves in it. Yeah.
Yeah, then, I was, go ahead, girl.
No. I didn't have anything else to say. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, like, I was like a junior in high school when that book came out, right? So it's having the books when you're younger is so valuable. Like being able to see yourself reflected positively in stuff that you know other people are reading, like the things that does for your self-esteem and like your sense of your place in the world. It's so powerful. So all of you who do want to write, like, please do it. Know that it's hard, but totally worthwhile.
Definitely do it. Somebody needs to hear your story, your perspective. And I always say there's an ear for every voice. And speaking of perspectives, we know that art is subjective. And people will take away plenty of different perspectives from your stories, Dear Martin and Dear Justice. But what is the number one thing you want people to walk away with after they put your books down?
Oh, I love this question. So all of my books kind of have this same central idea. I think right now there are 10 published, and they all have, so in Dear Martin, page 152, of every single printing, there are two lines at the top of the page that kind of encompass my story thesis in general. You can't change how other people think and act, but you're in full control of you. When it comes down to it, the only question that matters is this: if nothing in the world ever changes, what type of person are you going to be? And the central idea there is that you as an individual have to choose, number one, what you believe about yourself, and number two, how you're going to move through the world no matter what comes at you. And so it's really about agency. Like everything in my career is about connection and agency, people recognizing that they are human, humanizing ourselves so that we can humanize other people. And then with that humanity that we've realized, doing what we can to make the world around us a more habitable place for other people, you know, trying to decrease the misery of the world as much as possible. So yeah, that's really what all of the books are about.
Yeah. I love that we do have this responsibility to shape our world. And even though things are like going amok right now, what can we do to show up right now in this time? How can we, we are all pieces to it. And you know that saying where they say, if one person around the world does a thing to help their communities, like that would just impact us in so many different ways. And so if we all pick up our swords and just kind of go to battle in our communities in the ways that we know how, then we could totally see a change. We could totally see just some evolution. And like you said, make this place a lot less miserable to live in. Cause we are totally in the thick of it and it is not fun right now. And I feel like some days I'm just surviving. And so, I'm doing more than surviving. Let me stop. But I'm just saying, as far as my mental capacity and being able to like take in everything that's going on, that's where I feel like I'm just surviving.
Girl, welcome. And I feel like we all, it's true for literally everybody. And recognizing that that's true for everybody is where we find peace with just like being in that space. Cause I completely agree. Girl, last week I was useless after that shooting in Texas, useless. Like 3 or 4 days, I did nothing but cry. So, and it is what it is, you know? I think making sure that we are creating the space for ourselves to do more than just produce is really important. Like we need space to be and to feel and to think, because like, what can you actually produce if you're not doing those three things?
For sure. It's definitely about taking care of yourself too and having some balance, but I'm so with you. That's why I stayed away from it, Nick, because I knew I was going to be crying. I was like, I can't do it. I'm going to be so tapped out. It's not even funny, but I totally. Okay. Sorry. I don't know what happened there. Zoom decided to cut off on us, but Malcolm, edit that out for us, please. Thank you. Yeah, so I totally identify with having this balance, but also still staying connected with the world. And I think, Nick, this is a perfect time to take a really quick break. So let's do that and we'll be right back. You've been listening to the Power and Community Podcast brought to you by Art of Me, where we celebrate the power of storytelling. It's been so fun being able to pick the brain of a writer. Let's take a quick break. Stick around for our final segment, where we'll get some storytelling advice from writer and author Nick Stone. What's up, Art of Me fam? Shonda here, and I'm the host of the Power and Community Podcast, and I have a cool message for you. I need you right now to go head over to www.artofme.org, find our contact button, and hit donate now. That is the only way we're going to be able to continue to bring you amazing content, like talking to our filmmakers on podcasts, interviewing different communities in our publication, and then creating animations and short films. We want to continue to tell stories that are important to you. Head over right now, www.artofme.org, hit contact, and then hit donate now in order to help us fund amazing stories that are important to our communities. See you soon. All right, we are back and we are heading on to my favorite part, my favorite segment of the podcast, advice for writers. This is something we're doing mainly this season as we're creating a podcast for you all to find some incredible books by incredible authors that you will enjoy reading this summer. So Nick's gonna let us pick her brain a little bit. So Nick, talk to us about the story of Dear Justice and what inspired you to write this sequel to Dear Martin.
Yeah, as I mentioned, the two mentees I had that just literally asked me to write it, like that's 100% the reason that I wrote it. And I'm glad that I did. It, like I said, it was a very difficult book to write. It isn't the most difficult book I've ever written. The most difficult book I've ever written will come out January 31st, 2023. And I'm not even allowed to talk about it yet because it hasn't announced. That sucked is all I will say about that book. But with Dear Justice, making sure that I was doing what was asked of me by my kids was the inspiration for that book. It's like super anticlimactic, but that's the truth.
But a good, solid, and awesome truth though. I love that. So let's move on to, what about procrastination? I call it the great monster of procrastination because this thing will grab you down and hold you down. And actually Ryan from episode one gave us a pretty good perspective where he was just saying, man, you just write when you can. Like, he was just kind of like turning procrastination on his head, where it was like, there are just seasons where you just got it and it's going. And then there are just times when it's not. And that's not necessarily always a you thing, but I want to hear the perspective of you on procrastination. How do we writers defeat her once and for all? Or will she always resurrect? And if she does, what are ways we can defeat her time and time again?
Well, I will say the first thing about procrastination, like, we need to stop shading her. Like, she's not this awful negative thing where people are being lazy and deciding not to work. Procrastination is typically the result of having to face something that is emotionally taxing. Like, literally, this is the reason we procrastinate, because whatever it is that we have to do is taxing in some way or requires energy that we don't have, or we're afraid of it, right? So my trick, I procrastinate heavily, but I procrastinate by doing other things that fall in line with the work I'm already doing. So for instance, if I have a book due, I had a book due on Sunday, and Friday and Saturday, I worked on a different book. It's stressful, right? Like, coming up on a deadline is stressful. So when I am procrastinating, because I do think it's inevitable, I do think that we are wired to flee difficult things. I just make sure that I am procrastinating with something else that has the potential to be a story out in the world at some point. So procrastinate away. You can procrastinate away. Just do it in a strategic way, where whatever you're using to procrastinate is somehow contributing to who you are as a person, or it's some form of self-care, or it's like a next story you're working on. If you're watching TV, try not to just zone out and focus on the actual storytelling. See if you can figure out the act breaks in a show. Like, there are so many different things that you can learn while procrastinating.
So I'm hearing turn procrastination into a teachable moment or a learning opportunity. I like that. That is such a better way to think about it, because sometimes we get into this space where we really start to beat ourselves up. There's like no grace for ourselves. And we're just like, see, this is why you suck. See, you know, and we just go into this just not healthy space of thinking. So I love that, where it's like, because this is taxing. I'm 100 pages into my second draft. And I'm like, girl, if you don't finish these next, you know, whatever, 100 pages, like, start going ham. But literally, it took me a while to get to those 100 pages. And I was at 90. And so I was like, okay, 10 more pages, we'll get to 100. And I had to like carve out a Saturday to just sit and write the rest of the pages. But I don't know, like, a part of me was like, you could have been got to this point because I had achieved it. But that's not necessarily the truth. And I'm very proud of myself, you know? And so I do think we can be very hard on ourselves.
Yeah. And also, like, for me, a huge turning point was recognizing that time scarcity is a myth. Like, y'all will get it when I finish it. Like, I'm not like, yes, deadlines are important in order to make published, like, so the book will come out, but also, if the book has to be moved, the world isn't going to end, you know, just recognizing that, like, we actually do have time. It's just how we decide to use it, and recognizing that everything we do with it can be beneficial, even if it's, I'm sitting and watching TV for 4 hours. Cool. What did I get out of that? Did I get restoration? That's a good thing. Did I get some storytelling ideas? Another good thing. Finding the positives in everything is just how I move. And I think it's something that could benefit everybody. Like, if you're getting anything done, you're doing good.
I love that restoration thing, because I'm really trying to get out of the grind culture, because I just think that's so unhealthy. I love that. I love to relax and just do what I love. This is one of the things that I love. And I'm like, so look, I quit my job in 2020 and I just was like, I want to just freelance. I just want to enjoy myself. I don't want to go to a workplace and stress all the time. And I did that way before we had the great falling away, they're calling it, way before it had a name. I was out the door. So I'm so grateful to be a part of this movement where we're prioritizing our health and really doing the things that we love, because this is, it feels so good. Okay, cool. And so, yeah, I do want to pick your brain on one last question. Do you have a specific way that you map out your story plots? I know some people use notebooks, pins, websites, like story mapping websites and apps. Some people even create mood boards. What do you do as you're creating the world of your character, as you're creating the character to kind of really bring the picture all together? Or is it all in your mind? Do you hold it all up there?
World is something that comes toward the end for me. I mean, because typically I'm writing contemporary novels and they're all set in Atlanta. So like, that's easy, right? I did write a series for Marvel Comics about Shuri, the little sister of Black Panther. So then I just spent 2 years just hanging out in Wakanda. And that was fun. But I think I do have a very strict process that I adhere to with every single book. I get inspired by something and then I get a composition notebook. I call it the I only eat raspberries method. The I is for inspiration, O is organization. And like, there's a composition notebook for literally every project I do. It's got its own notebook, character names, character traits, lines of dialogue, plot points, et cetera, et cetera. And I just kind of let stuff flow from my head into that book. Once there's enough in the book, I use what's in there to create an outline. And like, if I'm researching, research stuff goes in the notebook. Once I have the outline, I move into execution, which is writing a draft. And because first drafts are always bad, let me repeat that. First drafts are always bad, friends. It is never your best work. You have to raspberry, revise. So inspiration, organization, execution, and revision. And I mean, look, let's be honest. A lot of the storytelling process is very ethereal and kind of like nebulous, and like, you, those words basically mean like you can't touch them, you can't understand them, they're difficult to understand. So just letting, in a very woo-woo way, but just letting things flow out of you as they come, is that's storytelling for me.
And I would like to add on to that. And when you're listening to conversations and talking to people like Nick or listening to content, that is also sometimes the best time to, after you're done listening, go write and sit at your computer. Because sometimes, I don't know if it's just me, but just being in the space of people who have already done it, or even just writers in general, it's so fun to have those like back and forth conversations and just to plan and talk. And those are the times when I get really excited about my story. And I'm like, yeah, because my story is doing this and I want to do this. And what do you think about this? So oftentimes I'm like, probably when I get off recording with you, I'm going to probably pull up my book and start working on a little bit. But I totally agree with you about it being just kind of untouchable. And everybody, I know Ryan said in our last episode, he talked a little bit about just the process being different and that he doesn't like always try to do this formulaic thing, like as far as giving people formulaic ways to write, but just kind of telling people how to figure out themselves. Because I'm totally into the mood board. I use like Trello. I use Mina Note. Like I just kind of, I like to go back and look, but even I don't even just adhere to that, the storyline all the time that I planned out. Sometimes I'm like, well, I got to tweak this a little bit. This has to change. Even though I wrote it out specifically this way the story is going now, I want to change this just a little bit because I think it works better to really encompass what I'm trying to say here. And so my process is a little bit too different, but I did learn the outline thing, the importance of that, because I never used to do outlines. I used to get 100, 200 pages into writing books when I was like 16 years old, like at a young age, like 15, 16. I used to just sit at the computer all day. All my friends are outside. I'm in the house just writing, and I never had outlines. And so I would never finish. And so I had to learn that outlining was going to help me in the long run, because I'm writing all this stuff and then I don't really know where the story's going, but I'm having so much fun writing it, but I'm just like, oh, I don't know how this is going to end. And then I would never finish. And so I'm totally the outlining part. Like you said, I'm so into that. And that would be also my advice. I know Nick's giving her advice, but that would be my advice too, is to at least know where you're going from beginning, middle, and end. So then there's so much time to have fun in between the plan that you created out as well.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I do have friends who can't outline. So really the piece of advice here is figure out what works for you and do it.
Yes. Okay, let's end with that. I love that. Figure out what works for you and do it. And that allows you to truly be a creative and a writer and be free, because it's not fun always having to follow other people's rules. Trust me, I've spent hours on Google trying to figure out how to finish a book, and it's just not always fun. These I'm a Reddit person at these days, and like sometimes listening to all the advice on there, I'd be feeling so overwhelmed. I'd be like, should I self-publish? Should I publish? I don't know what to do. So it's not always fun. Sometimes I agree with you, figure out what works for you. And that gives you a lot of peace of mind in the end to stay true to yourself. And so we are about to head on out of here. I am not happy about that because I feel like you're one of those people I could talk to for hours. And so this has been so fun. I know you cannot tell us what your upcoming project is, but can you tell us when to expect it? You said the date earlier. I just want to let everybody know when to look out for that new project.
So I'll give you three. The first is Whiteout. So I wrote a book called Blackout with five of my friends last year. And so the second one is coming out. It's called Whiteout, set in Atlanta during a snowstorm. That is out, I believe, November 15th, maybe.
Okay.
I should probably know what the date is.
That's okay.
It's in November. It comes out in November.
Okay,
January. Good. And then I have two solo books coming out. The one is January 31st, 2023, and the other is February 28th, 2023. The first one is nonfiction, and the second one is a young adult novel.
You've been busy. You just named three books you're about to drop.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you, girl.
What else was there to do during the pandemic but write and watch television and make sure my children had lunch?
I'm proud of you. I know I just met you, but that is amazing to be able to drop three books like that. I mean, that is freaking amazing. Okay, so she has three projects coming out. I need y'all to go stay in contact with Nick Stone. Can you drop your social media and website for us so we can keep up with you?
Yeah, Instagram, I am at Nick Stone, N-I-C-S-T-O-N-E. Website is www.nickstone.info. I'm on Twitter, but don't bother because I don't actually do anything on there. I think I'm just more there. I don't know why I'm even still on there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's a Facebook page. I can't remember what it is. It might be Nick Stone Writes. I'm waiting for that, like, just regular Nick Stone handle to open on Facebook so that I can take it.
Cool. There. Okay. You know what? I'm on Twitter too. And I deleted my old Twitter just because it started to become a very toxic place. So I totally understand like not really being on there that much, but everyone listening in, please go and connect with her social handles. Go look at her website, some cool things on there. You can check out the books that she's written, and then please look out for her upcoming books. Those three books that she's dropping. I mean, just congratulations. I think that is amazing. And speaking of websites, don't forget to follow us at www.artofme.org. Our Instagram is artofmeorg. Our Facebook is Art of Me Productions. And our YouTube page, Art of Me Productions. Follow us as well so you can connect with more awesome writers. So you can connect with more awesome writers like Nick Stone. Again, I've had such a great time on the podcast with you today, Nick. And I'm so excited for the next episode, everyone. So please tune in. We will be right back with episode 3 to talk to another amazing writer by the name of Ayanna Gray. So come back. We're so excited. Okay. Thanks for being here, Nick. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. Bye, everyone.
Bye.